Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Got my mojo working, but just don't work on you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and this is a special edition of our program. Today, we're going to examine vaccines, their safety and efficacy. We've been led to believe by all the major agencies of government involved, under the umbrella of the National Institutes of Health, the FDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease, have all said vaccines are safe and effective. The American Medical Association has joined in that, as has the leading promoter of vaccines in the United States as a medical group, the Association of Pediatrics Physicians. Our concern is not whether a vaccine in and of itself is safe or effective, but what all vaccines are, because people are taking a combination of vaccines. They're taking dozens of vaccines, and in many cases, they're mandated. Every child that's born in a hospital in the United States is immediately given a hepatitis B vaccine within hours of birth. I'm asking a simple question. What is the science to justify this? I believe that we should allow our feelings, our beliefs, and our actions be based upon what the actual, real, independent science shows. Unfortunately, today, there is a national campaign underway, and the same people who were involved in campaigns, for example, in the first Gulf War back in 1991, are engaged again in these campaigns. You see leading individuals from professors at University of Pittsburgh and other physicians and scientists coming forth everywhere, almost in every medium, and they're all saying the same things. Vaccines are safe and effective, and you should not be questioning them. If you do not get your child or yourself vaccinated, you're putting the rest of society at risk, and therefore you must look at the larger good. The herd mentality is that we must have at least 97% of the population vaccinated. The media, and especially and surprisingly the liberal media, has not only taken charge of the attacks against those who would question the safety and efficacy of vaccine, but they've also engaged in the demonization. In effect, a modern-day medical McCarthyism. The Nation magazine, Mother Jones, MSNBC, Rachel Maddow, Bill Maher, virtually the entire corporate democratic liberal establishment has been engaged in fear-mongering and the lowest forms of challenge. Now, if they are doing this challenge based upon careful, methodical research and scholarship, fine. But I keep hearing them all say the same thing, and we keep seeing that these are the talking points for the vaccine industry, meaning Big Pharma, because vaccines are manufactured exclusively by big pharmaceutical industries. Now, there's several issues we're going to discuss in this program today. Many people you're going to hear from, including, are these the same pharmaceutical companies that have been found to have settled hundreds of thousands of lawsuits for billions of dollars for every type of crime imaginable in medicine? Did they know in advance that drugs they were creating, such as Vioxx, was known to increase heart attacks and strokes, and therefore more Americans died in 4 years from that one drug than all of American casualties in the entirety of the Vietnam War? And yet not one person was charged, challenged, or went to jail. The stock in the company went up, the president of the company got a raise, and the stockholders benefited. Yes, it's the same companies. Are these the companies that will spend more on lobbying than on research? Yes. Are these the people who are so good at their lobbying that they got one of the U.S. legislators at the 12th hour in the middle of the night when the Patriot Act was being proposed to slip in a rider that would have exonerated held harmless all vaccine manufacturers. Even if their vaccines killed every single person that took it, they could not be sued. Yes, same company. Are these the people that will hire the former head of the CDC to go from overseeing the safety of vaccines to running the vaccine department? Same people. So we have serial offenders. We have people who have a terrible reputation for honesty, ethics, decency, and following the standards of accountability on major public health issues. They risk people's lives. They have taken people's lives by their irresponsible drugs, and they did not do this blindly. They simply added in the cost of doing business. If we make $22 billion, true story, and it costs us $5 billion, true story, then it's worth it. And that's how the mindset is. Remember, you cannot separate a vaccine from the people who manufacture it, from their motives, from the way that they go about having ghost-written studies, fraudulent studies, cover up bad studies that would implicate them in promoting a vaccine that has an association with mental problems, mitochondrial imbalances, including autism. How can they get away with it? Because they control the media at every level. That's our program. That's what we're going to investigate. I'll be sharing articles by Dr. Gary G. Coles on vaccine-induced immune overload and the virtual epidemic of chronic autoimmune childhood diseases today in the United States. Also from Professor James Tracy, the MMR measles vaccine can cause diabetes, arthritis, and death. We'll also be hearing from Dr. Diane Harper. Now, Dr. Harper was responsible as one of the lead scientists on the human papilloma virus vaccine. Well, you have not heard her talk about some of the medical conditions that are actually listed in the ratios of how they would happen by taking the Gardasil vaccine. The average person taking a Gardasil vaccine is unaware of how dangerous it is. Remember, Dr. Harper was a doctor that was directly involved with the clinical trials for the approval of the vaccine, and they conclude, quote, "The decision to vaccinate with human papilloma vaccine is a personal decision, not one that must be made for public health. Human papilloma virus is not a lethal disease in 95% of the infections, and the other 5% are detectable and treatable in the precancerous stage," end quote. Why is it that parents are not told that before they're told to mandate at the state level getting their sons and daughters the vaccine? They also listed several conditions in which the human papilloma virus vaccination is most likely the culprit, having linked to a variety of autoimmune diseases, which include multiple sclerosis and primary ovarian failure, meaning putting a young girl in a capacity to go through menopause, premature menopause, simply by the vaccine. Quote, "The 2008 FDA closing statement on Gardasil reports that 73.3% of the healthy girls who participated in the clinical trials developed, quote, new medical conditions. The list highlights some of the new medical conditions that young healthy girls have." This is in the FDA's own closing statement on Gardasil. Quote, "Blood and lymphatic system disorders, 2.9%, that's 1 in 34 girls. Gastrointestinal disorders, 13.4%, that's 1 in 7 girls. General and administrative site conditions, 3.8%, that's 1 in 33. Immune system disorders, 1 in 50. Infections and infestations, 52.9% of all girls getting it. That's 1 in every 2 girls. Injury, poisoning, procedural complications, 8%, that's 1 in 12 girls. Also, musculoskeletal and connective tissue disorders, 6.8%. That's 1 in 14 girls. Nervous system disorders, 9.4%, 1 in 10 girls. Psychiatric disorders, 4.4%. That's one out of every 22 girls, healthy girls, that gets the Gardasil vaccine will end up with a psychiatric condition. Renal disorders, 2.7%. That's 137. Reproductive and breast disorders, 24.8%. That's 1 in 14 girls. Respiratory, thoracic, 5.5%. Skin and subcutaneous tissue disorders, 1 in 13. Surgical procedures, such as appendectomy, 10%. That's 1 in 10 girls. Quote, a year ago, the vaccine was taken off the recommended vaccine schedule in Japan due to adverse effects. What's even more concerning is the fact that today's vaccine has twice the amount of aluminum in it. Later on, you'll be hearing from an expert on aluminum toxicity in studio. So this is what can happen to children who receive aluminum-containing vaccines. Quote, another groundbreaking article titled Quantifying the Possible Cross-Reactive Risk of the Human Papilloma 16 Vaccine, published in the Journal of Experimental Vaccines and Therapeutics and Oncology, concludes, quote, the number of viral matches and their locations make the occurrence of side autoimmune cross-reactions in the human host following the human papillomavirus 16-based vaccination almost unavoidable, end quote. The list is literally endless, and for the sake of not turning this further in time than what is allowed, I'll simply stop there. Now, here's my question. When was the last time anyone, any parent, any teenager, any physician, any nurse, giving the human papilloma virus vaccine, Gardasil, told of all these complications published by the FDA, published in the medical literature? All you had to do is read the peer-reviewed journal Autoimmunity Reviews, an article entitled On the Relationship Between Human Papillomavirus Vaccine and Autoimmune Disease. And the authors of the studies came to the same conclusion as Dr. Harper, that it is not something that we should be mandating. Dr. Diane Harper, quote, they created a huge amount of fear in mothers and appealed to mothers' sense of duty to get them to their daughters vaccinated. That's correct. They did. So just on that alone, just on the basis of Gardasil and how many girls have died, how many have been injured, tens of thousands, hospitalized, their lives changed forever. For what? Now, that's just one part of this. Now we must look also at a new film, at a new documentary, a very important documentary. Before we go there, and it's all about just one ingredient, and that is thimerosal, or mercury. And this person would not have done this documentary had it not been for a simple head scratch of a nail and going in and getting a tetanus shot, and then going through hell. And what he experienced led him to realize that it was the mercury, and he'll tell that story. This is something that the people supporting the pro-vaccine position should consider. Merck's former doctor predicts Gardasil to become the greatest medical scandal of all time. Quote, it is simply no longer possible to believe much of the clinical research that is published or to rely on the judgment of the trusted physicians and authoritative medical guidelines. I take no pleasure in this conclusion, which I reached slowly and reluctantly over my two decades as an editor at the New England Journal of Medicine. And that was sourced by Professor Marcia Angell. She's a physician and author, along with being the first woman to serve as editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, regarded as one of the most prestigious peer-reviewed medical journals in the world. Since the Food and Drug Administration approved Merck's Gardasil vaccine in 2006, it has been surrounded by tremendous amounts of information and controversy and misinformation. Quote, it is a vaccine that's been highly marketed. The benefits are overhyped and the dangers are underestimated. And that is from Dr. Chris Shaw, professor at the University of British Columbia in the Department of Neuroscience, Ophthalmology and Visual Sciences. Now let us go to my guests who are standing by to discuss this in greater depth and what has happened to Americans who begin to question after doing their homework. We have Dr. David Geyer. Dr. Geyer is Vice President of the Nonprofit Institute of Chronic Illnesses, and he has extensive experience as a medical research scientist. He's authored over 100 peer-reviewed scientific medical journal articles. 50 of his studies examine the safety of such vaccines as hepatitis B, DPT, HPV, MMR, Lyme's, Hib, and polio. An additional 25 studies investigated the safety of the mercury compound thimerosal. In recognition of his scientific research, Dr. Geyer has been invited to present at numerous professional conferences around the world, including giving presentations at the Institute of Medicine of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences. His research includes the study of vaccine safety, autism, other childhood neurodevelopmental disorders, and toxicology and molecular biological mechanisms. And he has a background in vaccine science, immunology, and epidemiology, and at the National Institutes of Health Foundation for Advanced Education in Sciences. His website is mercuryfreebaby.org. So here we have a person with orthodox training who is pro-vaccine, who has published in peer-reviewed literature, presented at scientific conferences, been a part of the government's own inner workings. He will be on. With him is Eric Gladden. Eric is the director of the recently released documentary Trace Amounts, a film 10 years in the making that deeply explores the many scientific and politicized medical controversies associated with the relationship between the mercury compound thimerosal found in vaccines and the epidemic rise in autism and other neurological disorders. Now, as I mentioned, in 2004, after receiving a tetanus shot containing thimerosal that he was not aware of, Eric's life completely changed with the onset of a cascade of adverse physical, neurological, and mental symptoms following the vaccine. For the next decade, Eric researched the autism causes associated with vaccine ingredients and traveled the country interviewing individuals at length. He has a background in engineering from Oregon State University. His website is traceamounts.com. Nice to have you both with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Eric, we're going to start with you, because on the one hand, I have interviewed more than 1,200 victims of vaccination. I've reviewed over 7,000 scientific studies. I've traveled all over the world trying to understand how in the world something that has not been proven safe and effective by any gold standard is assumed to be completely safe and effective, even as Dr. Paul Offit said taking 10,000 vaccines at once is still safe. So what I'd like to do is have you tell us about your journey and how what you went through is what many children go through, because there are over 2 million parents in the United States today who have children with autism spectrum disorder. That does not include all the other millions of children who may be adversely affected, because not all the results are accurately counted, nor are they given help. But the symptoms that a young child goes through of autism, you went through as an adult. And had you not gone through that, you wouldn't have known and traced it back to what caused it. And because you were able to interview all these experts and get their advice, now you're able to help other people understand that how the vaccines can affect adults as well as children. So take us on your journey, please. Eric? He just got disconnected, I was told. Please keep in mind we've had individuals who have been trying to sabotage our programs. They took down our entire website, and it looks like they're at it again. Let's go over to David Geyer. David?
Hi.
Hi. David, let us go through why we should be concerned about the ingredients in vaccines. Start with mercury, because as we found out from one of the leading orthodox pro-vaccine people, mercury is still in the vaccines in tiny amounts.
Yeah, mercury, basically among the ingredients in vaccines, and I've studied and researched a lot of them, mercury is one that's the most scary to look at. Mercury is among the elements in the world. It's actually the most toxic of the non-radioactive elements. So we're talking about something that is incredibly toxic, toxic at a level that if you were to try to expose human cells to mercury, the mercury would be toxic that if you took a grain of salt from your salt shaker and you put that in an average-sized swimming pool, if there were human brain cells in that swimming pool, it would kill them. That's about one part per billion concentration. So mercury is very toxic at very, very small levels. And in looking at the vaccine schedule that children received in the 1990s, and it actually continues now into the 2000s and beyond, the amount of mercury in the vaccines is not so tiny. It's tiny to look at, as in it would be so small you probably couldn't see it, but from a physiological point of view, it's catastrophically enormous. As a matter of fact, the vaccines that have mercury, just a single shot, for example, if you go out and you go to your local CVS or Walgreens and you get a influenza vaccine today, as many public health officials are recommending, the amount of mercury in that shot, you would have to weigh 550 pounds to not exceed government safety guidelines for mercury exposure. So even as an adult, we are many-fold over the safety limit, but it turns out when you magnify that down to the size of a child, for example, children got not just one shot, but multiple shots on a given day with mercury. An average two-month-old was given 62.5 micrograms of mercury in the 1990s. They were over 120-fold over the safety limit. And this occurred at birth and in 2 months and 4 months and 6 months and then 15 to 18 months. These children were absolutely slammed with mercury, exceeding all safety guidelines. And as I said, it continues to go on in the influenza vaccine, which was never given to children historically, but is now recommended that all pregnant women are supposed to get that shot, and all infants are supposed to get three shots, and those children then are supposed to get annual flu vaccines for every year for the rest of their lives.
The rider introduced into the Homeland Security Act on the day before Congress's vote, which completely dismisses all lawsuits from Eli Lilly and all other companies with thimerosal injuries, introduced by Dick Armey. Bush Sr. was on Eli Lilly's board, the maker of thimerosal, and Eli Lilly, CEO, went on to become Homeland Security Counsel. And yet we're supposed to think that that is just business as normal. Now, there were hundreds of studies on mercury poisoning in the 1930s. Why are we ignoring all the toxic studies from the past?
In the case of the mercury in the vaccines, as you said, it's called thimerosal. Thimerosal is half mercury by weight. And what has happened since its development in the 1930s is that Eli Lilly, who patented it and has made millions, tens of millions, probably billions of dollars off of the sale of thimerosal over the years, has been a very aggressive defender of it. And I've actually had opportunity to review many of the Eli Lilly documents relating to thimerosal. And what they show is a very disturbing pattern of cover-up by Eli Lilly. Eli Lilly, of course, as a company, understood that if their product was associated with toxicity, that they would have trouble selling it. People don't want to use things that are toxic. And so Eli Lilly, through manipulation of the scientific literature, through giving grants and basically purchasing scientists for over 70 years, has defended the use of thimerosal. And they've defended it to the point where they threatened to sue other companies who even wanted to put basic precautionary labels on thimerosal-containing products. Things like it might be irritating to tissues, or it might be toxic if used for long periods of time. Eli Lilly threatened and initiated lawsuits against companies that were trying to do that. And Eli Lilly went so far as to not only publish that thimerosal was completely non-toxic, they actually hired scientists who published ascribing almost magical powers to thimerosal. They published in the 30s articles claiming that it would promote the healing properties of cells. I think what they were thinking is sort of like in Star Wars or Star Trek, you see these people, they put something on their skin and magically the wounds heal. Well, thimerosal clearly doesn't do that. It's toxic. It's damaging. As a matter of fact, we really don't have anything that can do that in 2015. So Eli Lilly was a big, big pusher of non-toxicity and using thimerosal everywhere. It's important to realize that many, I'm sure, of the listeners on this program, they might have used it themselves. It was also called merthiolate. Merthiolate used to be marketed if you got a cut, they would put the red solution on your skin to disinfect it, and that was merthiolate, which, by the way, was so toxic and damaging, they used merthiolate on the umbilical cord stumps of a number of infants in a hospital in Canada, and it turned out that a bunch of them died.
Wasn't it true about 20 died? In fact, wasn't it true every single baby in the study died?
The study was actually, they looked at 13 infants, 10 of them had died, and one of them had neurological damage. So it wasn't quite all, but most of them died, and when they analyzed their tissues, the amount of mercury was way above all the safety limits. So they demonstrated that the mercury from thimerosal would go into the body, into the blood, and into the organs like the brain, and it would reach very, very high levels very quickly.
What about all the pregnant women who are advocated to get the flu vaccine, which has 24 micrograms of mercury, and also discuss the synergistic association between the toxicity of mercury and aluminum when the two are combined?
Giving thimerosal-containing influenza vaccines to pregnant women is one of the worst things possible. Influenza vaccine, or for that matter, any vaccine and pretty much almost any drug, are contraindicated to be given in pregnancy. You know, it's a time of tremendous sensitivity. Everything is developing in the baby, even very, very benign things that usually don't cause damage in pregnancy can cause problems. Starting about 2003, 2004, the CDC, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, recommended that all pregnant women should start routinely getting influenza vaccines. And at the time, there were only thimerosal-preserved ones. Good news is, in more recent years, at least some of the influenza, if you work at it, you can get ones that have no mercury in it. And the moment that was done, people started worrying about what would be the long-term impact, because when you give a shot of thimerosal-containing influenza to the mom, the mercury from thimerosal travels through the blood across the placental barrier and builds up in the baby. And the question is, how much dose does the baby get? And this really shows you an element of scale, of size, meaning that even if a very small percentage of the dose of mercury ends up in the baby, and it turns out actually the baby likes to accumulate more mercury than the mom, but even if it's just a small amount gets in, you have to remember the size of the baby. I mean, it's recommended to be given in the first trimester of pregnancy. You may have a baby that weighs, grams or ounces, just tiny, tiny thing. And so when we talk about these safety limits, I was telling you about infants, for babies, people have done calculations, it may be a million times the EPA safety limit for mercury.
So we just managed to get Eric back. One last question before we go to him. Has your research, not your opinion, your research, established an association between the ingredients in vaccines in autism spectrum disorder?
Yes, overwhelmingly, both from databases that are publicly available, as well as the government's own secret internal databases. I've had opportunity to analyze now for many years and publish many, many studies. So the answer is an emphatic yes.
Okay, so there you've had an opinion based upon research from a scientist working full-time for decades in the field of vaccine science, who has published over 100 peer-reviewed journals, who was affiliated with the lecture before the Institute of Medicine of the National Academy of Sciences with the National Institutes of Health, telling you, yes, there is an association. And yet his opinion, his research, his science, and his scholarship is considered of no relevance compared to an editor of a magazine who is told that anyone who challenges the safety of vaccines or efficacy of vaccines is just a quack. I want to show you how, when I say the word medical McCarthyism, we have medical McCarthyism today on the left. Now, let's go over and say hello to Eric. Nice to have you back with us, Eric.
Hi, Gary. Sorry about that. My phone dropped.
That's all right. Eric, tell us your story, please.
So I guess it's been 11 years now. Back in 2004, I was building my fence in my backyard and had a little mishap with a rusty nail. So, you know, I hadn't had a tetanus shot in over 10 years. I think the last one I got was to go to college. And went down, got a tetanus shot, went back to work on my fence, and didn't think twice. But slowly, actually right away, some very minor symptoms started. And for probably the first few weeks, I just kind of attributed everything to stress. I had a pretty high stressful job. But, you know, I woke up one morning, probably about 3 or 4 weeks after getting the tetanus shot, and it was like somebody turned up the volume in my ears, and I had massive hyperacusis, basically sensitivity to noise. So I started seeing doctor after doctor, trying to figure out what was going on with my ears, and then the symptoms over a period of time slowly developed into visual disturbances and other neurological complications like tics, and started having problems with my speech and muscle twitching and tremors, and really over a period of about 3 months just laid me out neurologically with also a lot of psychological symptoms. So to make a long story short, you know, I was seeing neurologist after neurologist trying to figure this out, and what I ended up doing was walking backwards in time and just kind of looking at every single symptom and when it all started. And sure enough, you know, it's right when I got that tetanus shot. And at first I thought, oh, I must have got tetanus and maybe the vaccine didn't work. So I talked to my neurologist about that, and he assured me there was no way it was tetanus. And I had come across mercury poisoning extensively while researching my symptoms, but I was always, you know, me and my doctor talked about it, and there was no way I got a mercury exposure. But then eventually, after we kind of ruled out the tetanus aspect of it, I typed 4 words into Google, mercury poisoning tetanus shot, and sure enough, I got an exposure to mercury where I would have had to weigh 551 pounds to be within the federal guideline. And I just happened to have every mercury poisoning symptom in the book, and once I went through a process that removed the mercury from my body and brain, all my symptoms went away. And that kind of was the start of it, I guess.
We're going to go to the tape now and play a segment of your documentary for people to see the significance of this association. Now, mind you, today we're only focusing in this hour on one ingredient, mercury in vaccines. First, the reason why many of us believe that there is an epidemic of childhood conditions, autoimmune conditions, neurological conditions, behavioral conditions, because of the multiple ingredients in vaccines, especially to those who have an environmental sensitivity to begin with. And the fact that all of medicine, all of science has known of this toxicity of mercury, but refused to be honest about it. Let's go to the film now.
The first thing to note about thimerosal was it was patented by Eli Lilly scientists in 1927.
So Eli Lilly did an experiment on humans. There was a epidemic of meningitis in Indianapolis, and Eli Lilly's in Indianapolis, Indiana. 144 people came down with bacterial meningitis infections of the brain. And what Eli Lilly did is took a subgroup of those people, and they exposed them to thimerosal, extremely high doses. It was a 1% solution. So they were giving doses to humans of thimerosal that were killing animals in the laboratory. They gave it to them intravenously, and of the 22 people, all of them died.
Based on experience of giving these doses of thimerosal to these 22 persons, they said that thimerosal or methylate, they're the same thing, had a very low order of toxicity for man.
That is the only safety study ever done on thimerosal, is that he told them that it was safe when he gave it to 22 people, all of whom died, most of whom died within a day.
We were wondering if there's somebody we could talk to regarding the history behind like thimerosal and the whole controversy behind it. Is there somebody we could talk to about that?
Behind what now?
Pittman Moore bought thimerosal from Eli Lilly as a preservative for dogs. And what they found out, this is 1935, we have a letter that they wrote back to Eli Lilly where they stated that it caused so many reactions in the dogs that they said it was unsuitable for use in dogs. There are hundreds, maybe thousands of studies from the early 1930s through the present that have called into question the use of thimerosal in every single kind of product.
And a particularly interesting one was in 1948, there were so many complaints that the AMA, the August American Medical Association, put together a blue ribbon panel to study what they should do and recommend about all these complaints that were published in the literature. And Frank B. Ingley was
Dr.
on that
Frank
committee,
Lee.
Who's still alive today, and you maybe get to talk to him. We may have seen him.
We found out that the thimerosal would be toxic down to not grams, not milligrams, not micrograms, but nanograms, parts per billion, which was almost unbelievable. And this was published in the American Journal Medical Society, in the New York Academy of Sciences, and in the journal from the Chemical Specialties Manufacturers Association. And it didn't make a wave. There wasn't a ripple. No one seemed to care.
I'll just make sure that someone calls you back regarding what they have information-wise, okay?
Excellent. I appreciate that.
Mercury is one of the most toxic elements on the planet, much more toxic than lead. 2 parts per billion is the Environmental Protection Agency's limit in drinking water. 200 parts per billion is the level in liquid the EPA classifies as hazardous waste. 50,000 parts per billion is the concentration of mercury in most thimerosal-containing vaccines.
Society has put in place several institutions to take care of kids. First is the FDA. They're supposed to license vaccines, affirmatively prove they're safe. They have failed. The second institution, CDC, is supposed to mandate vaccines, again, based on safety and need. They have failed. The third group to protect kids is the doctors, the American Academy of Pediatrics. They have failed, partly because they can't be sued, partly because they're bought off by industry and government contracts. The fourth group, industry, they're normally responsible for ensuring safety because they can be sued if they make an unsafe product. They're off the hook, too.
Frank Ingley's studies in the 40s and 50s confirms that thimerosal is not effective as a preservative and extremely neurotoxic. Eli Lilly does nothing. A 1967 study in applied microbiology finds that thimerosal killed mice when added to vaccines. Eli Lilly does nothing. A 1977 study reports 10 of 13 infants treated with thimerosal for umbilical cord infections die of mercury toxicity. Eli Lilly does nothing. A 1983 study finds that not only is thimerosal extremely toxic to cells, but it is also capable of changing cell properties. Eli Lilly does nothing. A study in 1986 finds that thimerosal has the strongest irreversible lethal effect. Our own CDC, FDA, and AAP remain completely asleep at the wheel, allowing Eli Lilly to continue doing nothing.
When I was a little boy, we only got 3 vaccines. But my children, 5 of my 6 children, got 22 vaccines. Beginning in 1989, that's the thimerosal generation. That's the vaccine generation. And it's the sickest generation in the history of this country.
During the exact 5 decades that autism remained asleep at 1 in 10,000, children would receive 4 DTP shots, totaling 100 micrograms of mercury. But between 1989 and 1992, the levels of mercury would be increased, and the autism rates would start rising.
We added a new vaccine to our schedule, HIB, Haemophilus influenza B, which is a terrible disease, and I think it's really important to vaccinate against that. But that, too, contained 25 micrograms of mercury, and that was a series of four shots. So now we're up to 200 micrograms exposure. And then they added the hepatitis B vaccine, 3 shots, 12.5 micrograms each.
You expect that the drug companies would make sure that those vaccines are safe, and you have trust. Unfortunately, most people have trust that the vaccine companies are looking out for the safety of your children, but apparently that's not always the case.
Why aren't they asking CDC, why don't you study the Amish? You know, why don't you study these homeschooled kids? 30,000 homeschooled kids studied by the UPI and no autism in that group. So we know what the truth is, and these mothers know what made their child sick.
That was a clip from the newest film, Trace Amounts, by Eric Gladden, who's on the line now from Los Angeles. In Maryland is Dr. David Geyer, a leading vaccine scientist. Over to you, Dr. Geyer. Would you explain the difference between ethylmercury and methylmercury, since some of the pro-vaccine people say, well, you're getting as much mercury when you eat tuna or when you have some water as you would when you're getting a vaccine. Explain the difference and why they are not the same. They do not accumulate in the brain the same. And one, you're eating, and therefore it is a different way of expelling from the body through the intestine. One, you're getting injected, and it goes directly in. Please explain this.
First, let me just correct. I'm actually not a doctor. Thanks for the accolade, but I don't have that credential. But as far as comparing methyl mercury and the ethyl mercury, which is found in thimerosal, there are several things that are very important to note, because I've actually worked with thimerosal, I've worked with methyl mercury in the laboratory, so I can say something about what their chemical properties are like. And one of the most important things to understand about thimerosal is that it is a designer mercury compound. It was designed, as was mentioned, by Eli Lilly scientists in the 1930s, and it was designed specifically to be as toxic as possible. And it turns out that thimerosal has three unique properties, and they're all packaged into one. Almost any other kind of mercury, whether it's methyl mercury in fish, or mercury that might be in the bottom of a pond in the metallic state, don't have. Maybe they have one component, but not all three. Thimerosal is very soluble in water. And by very soluble, I mean that 1 gram of thimerosal will dissolve in 1 gram of water. That's very unusual for mercury compounds. They usually don't dissolve at all in water. Second of all, their thimerosal, the kind of mercury in it, is fat soluble. This is very important for being toxic to humans because our body is full of membranes, whether it's membranes on our skin or membranes around our brain in the form of something called blood-brain barrier. So the kind of mercury in thimerosal goes directly through the membranes inside of our body. And then finally, the ethyl mercury from thimerosal is very active. It has the ability to break down in the body very rapidly. And when ethyl mercury breaks down, it releases a kind of mercury, it's called inorganic mercury, that builds up and persists in the tissues. And basically, it can't get back out. So these three properties make thimerosal unimaginably sensitive, unimaginably toxic. It makes humans unimaginably sensitive to its toxic effects. And then, as you said, not only do you have those three factors that are bad with thimerosal, there you have the route of administration. When you eat fish, as an example, there is some methylmercury in the tissues of the fish, but it's bound up to proteins in the fish, it's bound up to selenium. These are all things that reduce the amount of methylmercury that comes off into our bodies. In addition, we have our GI tract itself, which has been exposed to mercury for a long time, so there's a lot of detoxification mechanisms that come into play very rapidly.
Okay, hold your thoughts. Eric, tell us about the cover-ups, plural, multiple cover-ups, of the dangers of vaccines, the toxicity of vaccines, and how The leaders of the CDC, the FDA, the World Health Organization, and the vaccine industry all conspired together to hide this information from the public.
Yeah, it's there's a something called the Freedom of Information Act where you can put in requests and access government emails and transcript meetings and so forth. So there's been a lot of organizations, State Minds being one, that extensively went through the Freedom of Information Act process to get a lot of these emails that were directly associated with the thimerosal exposures. And, you know, once the FDA finally did the math in 1998, the American Academy of Pediatrics actually took a great step in the right direction and said, you know, issued a joint statement with the United States Public Health Service that thimerosal should be removed as soon as possible. And they all kind of realized they had a big problem on their hands. And the CDC started looking into the vaccine safety data link and kind of did the initial study. Thomas R. Stratton came in and did the initial study on the data to analyze if there was a potential link between thimerosal and not only autism but other neurodevelopmental disorders. And his first run of the numbers was astronomically high. You know, when it comes to a relative risk, his first run was a 7.6, which is really, really high from a relative risk standpoint. So, you know, if you look at relative risk, if you have a relative risk 2, it would mean that a child exposed to thimerosal would have twice the chance of getting autism, for example, than a child not exposed to thimerosal. So 7.62 was just incredibly high. And what they ended up doing was a lot of manipulation of the data. David could probably speak better to this, but they started to stratify the data, and then they used exclusion criteria. And we've got their emails that kind of show the process that they went through. They went through another 4 renditions before publishing the study. And we've got all their emails that show exactly what they were doing to get those numbers down. And then they also called what was called the Simsawood Conference, where they held a private meeting with manufacturers, with Big Pharma, and a lot of government organizations to discuss these results. And there was a lot of concern within the meeting. And then they testified to Congress a month later saying there's no data that's ever shown any harm from thimerosal. So, I mean, there's just a lot of stuff that's going on here. And the studies they've used to conclude thimerosal does not cause autism are all, for the most part, epidemiologic in nature, meaning population studies, not biological or clinical science. And when you look at these studies, they're the most flawed, not only are they the most flawed, where it's almost embarrassing to read them because of the flaws in them. They're also not designed to rule thimerosal out as a cause of autism. That's not how these studies work. Yet the Institute of Medicine used these studies to fully conclude thimerosal does not cause autism, which you can't do. And then not only that, they said no further funding should be spent on looking at thimerosal. So, I mean, there is a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes here that the public needs to be made aware of, because there really is a lot more to the story here. And we're not just in the film having doctors and scientists tell the story of what happened. We're actually showing the documents from the CDC and the FDA and the Institute of Medicine and all the closed-door transcript meetings to show you what happened in history. And the public really needs to understand what's happened here.
Finally, before we go to a clip, talk about the whistleblower currently employed at the CDC, who is one of the heads of their vaccine safety committee, who was one of the lead authors on an article back in 2001 that showed there was no association between vaccines and autism, but then later came forward 14 years later and said that that was a fraud, that he had been pressured, that all the science had been pressured to lie. Now, that's a criminal offense. That's a felony, and it should be prosecuted as a felony, and yet now he is protected as a whistleblower. But they're still using the flawed studies to justify there's no association between vaccines and autism, and there is.
Yeah. Dr. Bill Thompson, has recently, not within the last 6 months, I guess, called Dr. Brian Hooker, and they had several or a lot of conversations. I think it was in the 30s to 40s. Several were recorded, and part of this is displayed in the film. However, he is one of the lead scientists at the CDC who has published several of these studies. So the one being the Thompson study in the New England Journal of Medicine, that was, to a lot of people, the defining study to show that thimerosal does not cause autism, or not autism, sorry, neurodevelopmental disorders or damage in general. And what they had done, they excluded autism, not excluded autism, but they didn't look at autism as one of the factors or one of the diagnoses in the study. So first of all, they excluded the entire susceptible population that this theory is based upon. But then they still found association between tics and speech delays in boys more than girls, which is very typical of autism. So Bill Thompson has come out saying that he was pressured to downplay the results. He was pressured to downplay the statistical association with tics.
He was pressured to lie.
Yes, he was pressured to lie.
You're aware that it's a federal offense for an article and the research of that article to be completed and then have people for their own political or ideological or financial, whatever reasons, to change the outcome from its original source. You're aware that that is a federal crime.
Absolutely. And, you know, he calls the Verstraten study that I was talking about earlier, he called that whole process a circus because it was an absolute circus. And then he was part of the Price study. He was one of the authors on the Price study, which showed not only does thimerosal not cause autism, it actually protects children from autism. And because of that, that whole Price study was rejected from two major publications, and then it was finally published in the American Academy of Pediatrics, I want to say. But
That shouldn't surprise anyone. Eric, hold your thoughts. We want to play another clip from your film.
Okay.
Everyone knows genetics can't cause an epidemic. Genetic susceptibility can. But you have to have the toxin. There's a lot of discussion about the video from the University of Calgary. They were going to look at snail neurons in culture because they're big. You can see them with a microscope and you can film them. And they decided to add compounds, metals, to these neurons to see if it had any effect that you could observe. And what they observed was exactly what we saw in the live animal. That mercury and only mercury caused the tubulin to disintegrate.
The EPA guideline for mercury, this is actually technically for methylmercury orally ingested, is 0.1 micrograms of mercury per kilogram body weight per day.
Between 1989 and 1992, the amount of mercury children were getting in their vaccines had over doubled.
The quantity of mercury, ethylmercury, that's contained in vaccines is actually not that much.
Per this new schedule, a baby with an average weight of 6 pounds on the day of birth would be exposed to 46 times over the mercury guideline. At 2 months, the same baby would weigh around 10 pounds and receive 138 times the guideline. This baby would have to weigh almost 1,400 pounds to be within the federal guideline. The same baby at 4 months is exposed to 79 times over the guideline. At 6 months, 86 times over the guideline. At 12 months, 55 times over the guideline. And to top it all off, this guideline is fatally flawed.
That guideline deals with methylmercury. Number one. And it deals with methylmercury given by mouth.
The guideline is based off eating fish, which is methylmercury. Thimerosal in vaccines is an injection of ethylmercury. A 2012 Italian study concluded thimerosal in vaccines was 50 times more toxic to cells than methylmercury in fish. And this study didn't even take into account other factors.
When you eat a methylmercury-containing fish, your body doesn't absorb all of it. When you inject an ethylmercury-containing vaccine, there's 100% absorption.
Dr. Tom Burbacher performed an experiment on monkeys to compare injecting thimerosal to eating methylmercury.
Whatever process that's going on in terms of moving the mercury from the body to the brain is actually happening a little bit faster with the thimerosal.
Both ethyl and methyl can wash in and out of the brain, but over time they convert into an inorganic form, which locks into the brain and accumulates. And ethyl would do this much faster than methyl.
The first time that we looked at the thimerosal animals, majority of it was already inorganic.
In the end, the thimerosal-exposed monkeys had twice the amount of inorganic mercury locked in their brain.
The 0.1 microgram per kilogram per day is not a good standard for ethyl mercury.
It wouldn't be until 1998 that the FDA would be forced to do the math and calculate how much mercury children were getting in their vaccines.
CDC was asked in 1998 by Congress in a law called the FDA Modernization Act. Congress asked them to add up the mercury in medicine to see how high it was.
And in the case of vaccines, it fell to Leslie Ball, a medical doctor at the FDA. And what she found was that the amount of mercury in the childhood vaccine schedule exceeded all the federal safety guidelines. This particular material came to the attention of Dr. Neil Halsey.
Neil Halsey, that worked for the American Academy of Pediatrics at the time, was in charge of making vaccine decisions. And he is quoted as saying, and he actually was seen crying, saying that if he had known how to calculate
the amount of mercury in the vaccines, he would never have endorsed it or supported it. We're at the end of our program. Eric Gladden and David Geyer, please give us your final closing thoughts. We'll start with you, Eric.
There's so much misinformation out there regarding mercury. I want to make it very clear to the public that the latest autism rates of 1 in 68 are based on children born in 2002. So this is potentially the highest mercury-exposed group yet. There's been a lot of everything all over the news saying mercury is removed, the autism rates keep going up. And these are children who got the fully loaded backstock of thimerosal-containing vaccines and then started getting flu shots in 2004. So that's one big piece of this that the public's been misled on. The other thing is thimerosal is not even needed in vaccines. That's the biggest tragedy of this. This is solely added to vaccines just to save money and to be lazy during the manufacturing. We can remove thimerosal finally and fully from the flu shots and any other vaccines without affecting the vaccine supply. And that's what the public needs to be aware of as well. And they can ask for thimerosal-free vaccines. There are flu shots that do not contain thimerosal, but people need to be made aware that they need to ask for those because there's 60 million manufactured this year alone that are fully loaded with the 25 micrograms of mercury given to babies and pregnant women all over. And we've got to do our best to educate and bring awareness to this.
Thank you, Eric Gladden, for your comments and also your new documentary, Trace Amounts. Final closing thoughts, David Geyer.
I think that in building on what Eric said about the presence of thimerosal in this country and how all these children continue to be exposed, we should remember that this is not just a U.S. problem. I've actually traveled around the world with the United Nations and spoken at various meetings they've had. And basically, every year, there are about 100 million children born in the world. And in most of those children in most of the countries are getting full-dose thimerosal-containing vaccines. So when we talk about numbers of autistics or neurodevelopmentally disabled children in the United States, we have to remember the U.S. is a very small part of the world. Or something like we have 4 million children born out of that 100 million. So there's something like 25 times more children in the world. How many children are being affected around the world? And the numbers, when you start doing the math based on my studies, it ends up in the millions, tens of millions, and it's just ongoing. There's no drop. There's no attempt to...
David, this conversation will continue. This is just 1 hour. This is just to allow those who believe, because historically they have been on the right side of history and the truth on so many movements, but they have been absolutely on the wrong side of the truth when it comes to the safety and efficacy of vaccines. We've only dealt with safety today, starting with the lack of safety in Gardasil and what people are not told, and now is focusing exclusively on mercury. We thank you for your work, and this is a message. We should stop the medical McCarthyism on the left by asking those people who are so determined to denigrate parents, physicians, scientists, because of their scholarship, and as if they have none on their own. Before you attack someone, why don't you ask them what information they have, the science they have, that may change your points of view? We have more than 100 scientists, physicians, specialists in immunology, toxicology, that could present a different perspective before people take the talking points of Big Pharma and write about them and then denigrate the parents who have educated themselves. We thank you all for listening. One final comment. My offices now on the Upper West Side, where they've been for nearly 20 years, are closed because we're moving. And I will give you the new address when we are fully open with new studios. We outgrew the old studios. We've got new ones. And also for those of you who go in to see Neil at the Closet, he is now at 89th and Broadway. And that number up there. And he's there 6 days a week from 11 till 8, 212-874-4000, 212-874-4000. Thank you all for listening.